Cummings is here from the Power of Peace Project doing some work. Can I say where you're doing some work, or is this all secret stuff?
Say it.
Tijuana. And here in San Diego. And there's an open invitation to Kit always. And the timing is unfortunately perfect. How are you, bro?
I'm good. Thanks for having me back.
Always good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you.
So, Charlotte, I feel like I've been doing a lot of basic stuff in response to it and a lot of reacting. But I'm really glad you're here because I want to go deeper. I want to get to the root of what's going on here, and I want to get to the main themes. So I know you used to be a pastor, right? Mm. And I know in pastor school they teach about the fallen. What's it called? The fallen condition focus or whatever. Like every story has a fallen. Every story's got a major sin in it. We got to find that and then preach about that all stuff. So what's the fallen condition focus here? What's the problem? What's the root of this?
Well, I had this trip planned. I've been coming out to the West Coast, working in L.A., San Diego, Tijuana once a month. And big work we're doing in Tijuana. So really, when this whole thing broke a couple nights ago, I was like, man, I so wish I could be there. Because when Ferguson hit, when Baltimore, when these things pop off, I try to get there. When we had the 10,000-person march through Atlanta, NAACP and Black Lives Matter, I marched just so I could feel the vibe, talk to the people, walk a mile so I can understand. And so when this thing broke, one, it just breaks my heart. But I think one of the biggest things that I've been thinking, it's just been on my heart, violence is cowardly and it's lazy. And I think that this is reactive. It's not responding. It's certainly not being proactive and getting ahead of this thing. As these incidents pop off across the country, but it's lazy and it's just it's a reason to go out and do something, and violence is like that. I don't care if it's on the street with our kids, if it's in prisons, and I deal with conflict resolution, mediation, bringing rivals together, and I believe there are smarter ways to handle this before they ever happen, and I haven't seen that yet.
That's the key. How can we prepare? And one quick thing on the violence and everything we're seeing now, I've written some stuff on Facebook in our most recent videos about if there are righteous and noble efforts within the Black Lives Matter movement. And I know you've been there, you've seen it, you felt it, and there are, right? There's problems that we got to fix. But none of those things are going to happen if you let violence take over the movement.
Right.
And I know some people will say, oh, Slater, you're just focusing on a small minority of the protesters, and that may be true, but left unattended to, that will define the movement. Right. Unfortunately so, right?
Right. And I learned this through trial and error, and the Power of Peace Project began in Georgia's most violent prison, middle of a gang war, dangerous place. We pulled together inmates. We started crafting a peace plan. We wanted to get ahead of the violence, and we wanted to get the guys that had the influence and the power to stop it before it started, when it started to brew. We see this bubbling up in our communities. We know the next thing is going to happen, and now there's this momentum and wave, and that people are looking for another reason. They're angry.
Yep.
When people get afraid, they get angry. And so this whole thing, I look at King, and Dr. King, I've been following him since I was 25, getting out of college. I became fascinated with the civil rights movement from Atlanta, the heart of the civil rights movement. And I started studying the way he handled these things. He wanted to bring about social change. And if ever there was a time, and we're seeing this racial tension rise, it's been there bubbling under the surface. Now all of a sudden it's starting to pop off again. In the 60s, obviously it was ugly. It was brutal. It was right in front of people on their evening news every night, seeing what was happening in Alabama, in Georgia, around the Southeast. Dr. King did not just react when there was an issue. He had a very, very proven method, and it was simple. Gather information before you do anything. Negotiate with the powers that be. Figure out what you're trying to get accomplished and start the dialogue. Self-purification. The people are going to be involved in the march, the movement. You've got to purify them, get them ready for what they're about to go into so that what we're seeing in Charlotte does not happen, because people have been trained ahead of time how to head it off. And then direct action campaign.
Wow. It's
lazy and it's cowardly, okay? When something happens and everybody's like, hit the streets, man, we're going to march. You haven't done anything yet. One, no information. Nobody knew what had happened. Somebody got shot. They didn't know if it was a black cop or a white cop. Then all of a sudden last night there's a shooting. They think it's a cop that shot him. They don't even know. There's no information gathering at all. One, skip step one. Yep. Two, negotiation. Who are you talking to? What are you trying to accomplish? Have you gotten to the powers that be? If you're Black Lives Matter, All Lives Matter, NAACP, if you're, you know, the next, you know, social change, white movement, whatever it is, who are you talking to? Do you have an agenda? Do you have an end game? You know, I mean, do you have information so you can speak, you know, competently and effectively? Do you have the right people at the table? Are you talking about the right issues? Self-purification, if we don't prepare ourselves to, if you want to march, march. It's our right to march. We need for our young to march, but we've got to teach them to do it the right way. The reason Dr. King changed an evil system is he knew the problems better than his enemy. He was negotiating ahead of the march and the conflict. He had trained his young people to march nonviolently. He even sat them down at counters and they practiced being abused.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, all the way down to physical conflict, because he knew that they were walking into hell. And then he said, we're going to march on March the 4th, whatever. Look what happened in Charlotte. There wasn't any kind of, they didn't have any information. They had no negotiation. They had no purification. They just showed up direct action. And of course, they started setting stuff on fire. I mean, but you ain't going to change nothing like that. Yeah. It's lazy and it's cowardly. That's my biggest problem.
Wow, really good. Can we talk more about the self-purification part? Because that's true for every movement and everyone listening right now.
Yep.
Right? We all need that self-purification.
Yep.
Can you speak on that, and maybe with MLK and then just in general?
Absolutely. We did it in the prison. Okay, now we do it in prisons all across the country, now in Mexico. We're going to graduate 50 men through the Power Peace Program in the toughest prison in Baja, Mexico this Friday.
Nice.
And these are rival cartels and gangs becoming peacemakers in a violent prison. Okay, so we're showing this thing works, right? They have been practicing the self-purification aspect of the movement. One, we got to figure out what the problems are in the cities. Then we got to negotiate the powers that be. Then we got to purify ourselves. In the first prison in Georgia, we got gang leaders together, rival gangs, and we got together and we began to, the self-purification process was us debating things that were going to happen ahead of time and saying, what if this happens? What are you going to do? What are you willing to tell your guys to do? And then we would talk to their rivals and say, if he does that, what are you going to do? And we started to come together. It was tested when there was an issue of $3,000 cash that was sent from one dorm to another because there was a shakedown coming. And now your listeners might be wondering, what in the world is this guy talking about? Okay, there's shakedowns when all the cops come down and they shake down, look for drugs, cell phones, weapons. Word gets out. $3,000 cash gets sent to another dorm from one guy to another. Well, after the shakedown happens, that $3,000 doesn't find it back, its way back to. There is about to be a war, a riot at that prison, okay? Hundreds of men about to go to war for $3,000, which is a little bit of money in a prison. The Power of Peace members had been trained. They knew the information, okay? They had negotiated with their rivals. They had purified themselves by practicing nonviolence. And then the direct action campaign was sending our leaders in that prison to the parties that were at odds and getting the $3,000 from one building to the other one. There was never a riot, and the administration never even knew it happened. To this date, if anybody's listening, sorry, we handled it for you. But the prison did not get set on fire because they had handled it the way Dr. King would have done it. Now, if convicts can do it in a prison, we can handle this in Charlotte, but it's going to take, we can't be lazy, got to have a plan. And we got to have true courage and not just go turn over cars.
The practicing of nonviolence, it's almost backwards. You almost think that not being violent is the absence of doing anything, right? I mean, that's like the neutral is not being violent.
Passive.
But it's the passive thing is not violent. But that's backwards.
No,
the nonviolence is the active, difficult thing to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Flipping cars is easy.
Yeah. Like, what are you going to do when it happens? Okay, so they lined up. Okay, it happened to be in Nashville. It's part of the movement a lot of people don't know about. They took students, black, white, Jewish students, came in from everywhere, sat them down in these classrooms, and then they would get behind them and they would call them horrible names. They would grab them, they would shake them, they would do everything they could trying to get them to lose their cool. They're practicing with one another, and it got it's rough, okay, right? And then, okay, now, they knew what the problem was in Birmingham, right? They knew who the powers that be. They had already asked for the they had negotiated, no. Then they got in those secret rooms. They practiced until they were ready. Then they went into Woolworths, sat down at the counter. They got burning coffee thrown in their face. Yeah. They didn't react. They got bug spray sprayed on their face. You know how they responded? The next day they came in, they wore masks. They had practiced, and so they were ready for what was going to happen. So there was no violence on Dr. King's part. It was the country seeing Dr. King's followers not respond violently that set the whole thing in motion, because the country then stood up for Dr. King's followers.
Yes.
Nobody's going to stand up for those people in Charlotte that tore things up.
Which is a shame. Beautifully yes. said. Kit Cummings, Power of Peace Project. Can you stick around, brother? I want to share. So there's one defense mechanism that I have in my life, and I use it all the time, and it's not healthy. It's not a good thing. And the problem is I apply it to whenever something like this happens, and I think it gets in the way of my understanding what's truly happening. So okay. I want to run that by you, and we can chat about that. We'll do that next. Kit James says, love your guest. He's always awesome. Indeed, James. Kit Cummings here from the Power of Peace Project. All right, I want to share with you my my defense mechanism, and it's not healthy, and I apply it to things like this, and it's not good. So help me work through this, my man. So my defense mechanism is I always relate any bad thing I'm going through, and I say, well, this other person has it way worse, or this other, or it could be way worse in this regard. So my dad dies a couple years ago, and I say, yeah, this is awful, but he could have died when I was 5, or this other person doesn't even know his dad, so it's not that bad. And it makes you feel better for a second, but it's not, you're like, it's a lot of stuffing, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So, and I do that with everything, and it's kind of how I gotten through, but it's not healthy. It can't be healthy. So then I apply it to something like this. So, and I see, you know, people, black people complaining about different things. And I'm thinking, listen, man, you got it way better than, we use the example of the first black city council member in San Diego, who we talked to a couple months ago, who, when he was a councilman, got a gun drawn on him by police because he was looking sketchy in his car, right? He's a city councilman. You got it way better than him. You got it way better than Jesse Brown, who was the first Navy fighter pilot who got a Medal of Honor after he died, and his wife couldn't even stay in a hotel in D.C. Couldn't even stay in a hotel. You got it way better. What are you complaining about? And that's me applying my defense mechanism to other people, and it's not healthy. Help me work. Does that make sense, first of all?
Absolutely does.
So what do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all do these things. They're coping mechanisms. They're how we, you know, deal with our pain. But really, I figured out that pain is pain. Okay, your pain is your pain. My pain is my pain. Okay, my loss, my suffering, all I know is how I've experienced my life and from my perspective. I don't know yours. And so you, in the example you used, you know, a 5-year-old losing his father is tragic. He won't grow up with a dad. A 30-year-old man losing his father is equally painful, because you're about to have a son. Jack's about to be born. And unfortunately, you know, he won't have that grandfather. I went through the same thing. Dad died when I was 23, and my kids never got to meet him. My wife never got to meet my dad. So pain is pain. And I think that one of the things that we teach, the Power of Peace principles, are to seek first to understand your opponent. Find common ground with your adversary. Walk a mile in the other man's shoes before you judge. Actively listen and pause before responding. Compassionately communicate and use your influence for peace. These things where, and this is the problem in our country right now. Everybody's dug in, Democrat, Republican, Black Lives Matter, All Lives Matter, white, black, Mexico, U.S., you know, cops, communities. Everybody's dug in. I know what I think. I don't care what you think. I'm going to scream louder than you.
Let me push back. So family says, police say gun was drawn. Mm. Family says he was reading a book.
Mm-hmm.
My reaction is, and I think a lot of people listen, is you didn't see the video. You weren't there. You didn't know what happened. What do you know? And but when you do that, and it may be true, but you're not mourning with those who mourn, and you're not meeting them, but it's right. But it's hard to meet someone. How do I say it? You know what I mean?
I do. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, information is huge, but really you can tell the same exact story to the same person at the same time, the same way. And people are going to process information the way that they see the world.
Yes.
Okay. So we're going to hear what we want to hear.
Yeah.
We're going to see, we can look at a video, see the same thing.
Yep.
You know, the kid in Cleveland that was playing with the toy gun. And people saw that same video and had different responses to how the cops handled it, had the boy, why he was there.
So what do we do with that?
Yeah, and so it depends on the person who is experiencing the situation, and where there is no communication, typically there's fear. I fear what I do not know, okay? Right now, we've got two sides dug in that do not understand one another. And so the further, hate happens at a distance. Judgment happens at a distance. When I get close enough to look you in the eye, see you, I'll give you a great example. This weekend, the reason I'm here, working with Bridge to the Future, my partner Jeff Wadstrom and Power Peace Project, we're putting on a community event in the most dangerous part of Tijuana. It's down in the southeastern portion of one of the most dangerous cities in the world, controlled by the cartels. Gangs run the communities, drugs are the business, and it's very, very dangerous, very, very poor. We're going to have a youth march through that town, a peace march, on Saturday morning. And on a field right in the middle of the crossfire, we're going to have a taco party, and we're going to have 1,200 tacos for those beautiful people that live in this town that doesn't even have streets with pavement, okay? I mean, if I showed you a picture, you'd say, that's a cartel hood.
Yeah.
Okay? And we're going to do it. Well, we're not just going to march in there, a couple of white guys, and say, we're here, you want a taco? It's like we had to gather information, okay? We had to negotiate with the powers that be. We've got to self-purify. And then we march, but we're not marching angrily. We're marching to celebrate a community that's hurting. Mm-hmm. So we had a meeting with a guy set up, and we'll leave his name out. And it turns out that the guy didn't show up at the meeting. Why? Because he was going to be killed and he had to leave town. Well, the guy they replaced him with, we found out who he was. We invited him respectfully to the field, met with him, asked for his blessing that we have a party on his field. Found out he got married a couple weeks ago, said, let's call it a wedding party, will you please attend? Now he's smiling, we're fist bumping. Now, I mean, please don't, anybody's listening, don't be mad at me. It's like, we're trying to do something beautiful for a community, but how would Dr. King do it? He would learn about that community. He would negotiate with the people that run it. He would tell them, here are my intentions, how do you feel? Mm. And then he would get ready for this march, and then he would show up and march, and it would be peaceful.
Yeah.
These residents are going to get a great experience and fed, not just their stomachs, but they're going to be celebrated. Now I've got a story to tell, and I'm telling the whole world about it right now at this moment, because we did it not the lazy way, not the violent way, but we did it the way that nonviolence always works. That's what we need to do in this city.
Perfect. Let's go to that, because we got 2 minutes. Okay. What can we do in San Diego to preempt the inevitable if we don't do anything?
I think every time something pops off, nowadays, it's you know, call in the National Guard, put a curfew in, shut everything down, crisis, state of emergency, boom. Now everybody's really on it, right? Tear gas. Okay, what if we started building a coalition ahead of time in every major city, right here in San Diego? And instead of just, God bless the mayor, chief police, all the people that get on TV, talk after the things happen and try to quell what's going on, what if we found out who's running that city? And I'm talking about some of the guys that typically don't... You don't talk to. If you want to stop violence before it happens, find some people that have influence over the perpetrators. Hmm. There are men that run these cities that we never see underground. We can get to them. I've found that in the prisons, the most dangerous men, if you respectfully say, will you help be a part of the solution? This and what's in it for you? A quieter prison means that you get to have a better life. Okay, you guys say you're tired of all the police brutality. Let's work together to bring more peace to your neighborhood so the cops will leave this place alone, right? Okay, before the next thing pops off, why don't we get all the powers that be in the room together, have dialogue, and come up with a creative strategy involving the wounded, the gang leaders, and saying, will you help us keep this from happening in San Diego if there's an illegal shooting or if there's a legal shooting? Mm-hmm. We already have the dialogue, and so when the masses hit the streets, the ones who hold the power stop them and say, whoa, young brother, we got a plan here. And don't you be turning over cars in my neighborhood because we already got the mayor's ear. We've been talking about this. Now you go home or you get in line.
Like, I can't say that to that guy.
Well, no, but
put that the right person can. No, but the right person can. I mean,
yes,
right?
He holds the power. That young brother's not going to come out and set a car on fire if his big brother is telling him to lay it down. But you've got to have those conversations ahead of time. So we have this idea to have town hall meetings in cities ahead of the events, pull in the powers that be, especially the wounded community, but make them put on a wristband, sign a pledge, those principles that I said, seek first to understand, all those things. Everyone, including media, has to say, yes, for the next 2 hours, we will obey these principles. Moderator has the right to exercise those principles. We get a dialogue started. So then when the next incident happens, everybody says, whoa, wait, we've already started a discussion. Let's implement our strategy, and at least we're ahead of the situation.
Yep. Yeah, that's the only way. Because you can't, in the heat of the moment, you can't do it the other way.